Now you don't have to stay linked to your desktop or laptop. Take Voice America on the go and listen anywhere. Get our mobile app for iPhone, BlackBerry, or Android at the Apple iTunes App Store, BlackBerry App World, or Android Market.
The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Business Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericabusiness.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Good afternoon. Get ready for Leadership Leverage with Dr. Robert Denker. No matter what role you play in leadership of your organization or business, you are sure to get helpful secrets that will improve that role. Now here's your host, Dr. Robert Denker.
Hello, good day, and welcome to Leadership Leverage. I'm your host, Dr. Robert Denker, and today on Leadership Leverage, we'll be exploring the topic of leadership from a unique perspective. That is, we'll be gaining an understanding of the concept called strategic intelligence. In our discussion, we'll learn what it means to be a strategic leader and how you can improve your strategic intelligence. To help us navigate this journey today, our guest has the knowledge to help all of us gain a better understanding into this special competency, a competency that clearly sets apart leaders who are effective from those who aren't. I'm referring to the distinguished and popular educator, author, and international consultant, Dr. Michael McAbee. Michael is a globally recognized expert on leadership who for 35 years has advised leaders in business, governments, unions, universities, and nonprofit organizations in more than 30 countries. He is president of the McAbee Group in Washington, D.C., which offers consulting, coaching, research, and leadership workshops. Michael earned his Ph.D. from Harvard University, where he directed the program on technology, public policy, and human development from 1978 until 1990. He also graduated from the Mexican Institute of Psychoanalysis, where he studied under Eric Fromm, and with Eric Fromm wrote the book entitled Social Character in a Mexican Village. He is author of several other books, including The Gamesman, The Leader, Sweden at the Edge, Why Work, Narcissistic Leaders, and The Leaders We Need. He is a fellow of the American Psychological and Anthropological Associations and the National Academy of Public Administration. Presently, he teaches leadership at Oxford University School of Business. Today's dialogue emulates from the writings, research, workshops, and university lectures Michael McAbee conducts across the globe. Michael, welcome back to Leadership Leverage, and for a third time, I might add.
Yeah, thank you, Ross.
Yeah, really delighted to have you on the show, and I mention that all the time, and I think it's important for me to reiterate of why you're such a delight, because you're both an anthropologist as well as a psychoanalyst. And as an anthropologist, you try to understand leaders in the context in which they operate. And as a psychoanalyst, you tend to see leaders through a Freudian lens. And it's that duality of perspective that just allows you to have such deep insights into this whole topic of leadership and what makes people effective in these leadership roles. And when I think about strategy, I mean, leaders want to think of themselves as strategic. In fact, if someone would tell a leader that they're not very strategic, that almost is a personal affront. But I wonder if you could talk to us briefly about exactly what is strategy. In other words, how do you define strategy?
Well, it comes from the Greek word strategos, which just means a general, so that in one sense, strategy really has to do with whatever the person in charge determines is going to be done. But in business, it's come to mean more than that. I think the best definition is from Michael Porter from the Harvard Business School, who define strategy as the unique positioning and distinctive value chain for a company or any kind of organization in the market. And I've used that definition as working as a consultant with companies and also with the university. The focus there is how are we distinctive in the market? And, you know, I think you have to also include in that Peter Drucker's famous three questions that he always insisted that anyone doing strategy should be able to answer, which is, number one, what business are we in? Two, who are our customers? And three, how do we add value for them? What are they willing to pay for?
And with all due respect to Michael Porter, the last definition by Drucker seems to have so much better clarity to it, I think, on a more practical level, that a lot of leaders could probably get their hands around.
Yeah, but I think both of them, I've used both of them together, and I think together they're even stronger. But further, there are some people who think, well, strategy, you really shouldn't be trying to predict the future. You should be, your strategy should be the ability to react to things. You know, there's a famous saying by Samuel Goldwyn in Hollywood who said it's a mistake to make forecasts, especially about the future.
Sure.
And there are those who look at strategy from the point of view of trying to predict what's going to happen, and others, the famous business thinker Russell Acuff, used to always say the important thing is not to predict the future, but to create your own future. And I look at strategy that way. Strategy really has to do with creating your own future.
And so, in a sense, it gives you some power as a leader.
Right. I mean, it's the difference between predicting it's going to rain and building a shelter for yourself.
That's right, in the event that it may rain.
In the event that it may rain.
So talk to us a bit about how and why the business strategy has, I guess the definition of business strategy, how has that come about or changed through the years in your experience?
Well, you know, when I worked in the 80s with AT&T, which was a monopoly, and there were a number of large monopolies or semi-monopolies. Strategy was just extrapolating what did we sell last year, what do the demographics look like in terms of the kind of people that are going to buy our product, and then creating algorithms to decide how much you're going to produce and what you're going to sell. They used General Motors, which had a control of the market at that time, people in the organization used to laugh and say, those strategists are up on the 14th floor where the rubber meets the air.
Oh, that's funny.
In other words, they were saying, these strategists are working in just in a kind of formulas
mm-hmm.
without being in the real world. Well, you can't have strategy that way today. It doesn't work. I mean, you can't predict how much you're going to sell. You have to be able to understand currents. Who are your competitors? What does your market look like? And I think that's where Porter's point of what's your unique positioning and what is your distinctive value chain, so that you know you have a strategy like Apple, which is a strategy of innovation. We're going to create products that nobody's ever seen before, but because they're so cool and we like them ourselves, we think they're going to sell.
Well, that's right, and it really, for them, I think it started from the inside and then went out, didn't it?
Yeah, now that's totally different from the way in the past organizations looked at strategy, and still, many, of course, are still thinking more or less in the old-fashioned terms, but it doesn't work. Or they're seeing their strategy in some kind of general terms. We're going to be the leader. We're going to be number one in this market.
Right.
So Jack Welch had that strategy for a while. He said to all the various GE companies, you have to be either number one or number two in your market or get out of the market. And you know what happened. Many of those companies just narrowed their market, so they were number one or number two. They didn't sell more. They just gamed the strategy.
Interesting. So what should a company do? I mean, where does a company start today then?
Well, my view is that to do strategy today effectively, you need leaders who have what I call strategic intelligence. And that includes the ability to have enough foresight to see where things are going, where the market's going, where the demographics are going, what people would either need or would give them a enhanced value. So the leader needs to start out by that kind of sensing the patterns that are going on. And that's not so easy. And it is not something that every individual leader can do by him or herself. And that's why the second element of strategic intelligence is the ability to partner with others who add to your competence so that together you're able to begin to see what's going to happen. For example, if we look at healthcare, just to give an example, we're seeing trends like more and more people are going on the internet. More and more people are becoming intelligent and making their own decisions about what they need. They're questioning the physician.
That's right. They are. The patient-doctor model is changing in that respect.
So you have to think about that. Also, more and more people don't want just to be treated in a narrow way. They want to be treated more in the whole sense, the way it's done at some of the best healthcare organizations like the Mayo Clinic.
Mm-hmm.
Also, we're seeing more and more rising costs. So you've got to be looking at how am I going to cut my costs without losing the quality and value. These are all the kinds of things that you start with. Second of all, leaders need to be able to create a vision. And that vision, in the old sense, vision was a kind of thing like we're going to be number one or number two.
Mm-hmm.
That's inadequate. What we need to have a vision that is systemic. In other words, it needs to include the kind of people you need, the kind of competencies you're going to need, the kind of technology you're going to need, how it's all going to work together. A narrow vision that doesn't include that kind of systemic understanding is not going to be very useful at all.
Michael, we need to take a commercial break, but when we come back, I do want to talk more about this issue of thinking systemically and how leaders go about that. I also want to talk a little bit more about how the concept of you can't do it alone in leadership. You're going to need others to help you with the strategy. And I also just want to touch on an issue about demographics. And we had been talking about Peter Drucker, and I'd just like to ask you about the dominance that demographics play in formulating strategy. So we'll do that after this commercial break. You're listening to Leadership Leverage here on Voice America Business. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Be sure to friend us on Facebook. You can do it right now. Visit facebook.com/Voice America or search for us at keyword Voice America.
Since the year 2000, RD and Partners have been helping client organizations across North America and Europe achieve breakthrough performance by providing practical solutions for talent identification, talent development, and improved team performance. Our services include executive coaching and onboarding, sales selection tools, validated to predict sales success, web-based pre-employment and development assessments for executive, managerial, supervisory and professional positions, talent reviews and team coaching, as well as competency modeling, including web-based custom 360 surveys. At RD and Partners, we don't arrive with ready-made solutions. Our service offerings have to fit the context of every aspect of your company, its markets, competitors, strategy, and culture. Please contact us today at rdpusa.com or by calling 888-600-7457. We look forward to helping you be successful by building and retaining your high-performance talent.
From the boardroom to you, Voice America Business Network.
You are listening to Leadership Leverage with your host, Dr. Robert Danker. If you have a question or comment about today's program for Dr. Danker or his guests, please call 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or if you prefer, send an email to info@rdpusa.com. Now back to Leadership Leverage.
Welcome back to Leadership Leverage. I'm your host, Dr. Robert Danker, and we've been talking today on the concept of strategic leadership, and more specifically, gaining an understanding of what it means to have strategic intelligence. Our guest today is the distinguished and popular educator, author, and international consultant, Dr. Michael Maccabee. Today's dialogue emulates from the writings, research, workshops, and university lectures Michael conducts across the globe. Michael, before we went on to break, I wanted to ask you something that I read regarding strategy from Peter Drucker that just stuck with me, oh, so many years now, probably approaching about 15 or 20 years. And Drucker was talking about the surprise that educators had when the influx of the baby boomers started to enter colleges and universities, and the surprise was that there wasn't enough dorm space and classroom space. Buildings had to be built. They were putting classrooms and students in these mobile trailers until they could to build the buildings. And what surprised him, he said, is demographically, if you looked at the demographics, you knew that that was coming. In other words, the demographics are an interesting element into this equation of strategic thinking because, in a sense, Drucker said, it already happened.
Yeah, they already happened, but it's a perfect example of a lack of foresight. That foresight means you're seeing a trend. It's happened, but it hasn't fully expressed itself yet. Another trend like that, another demographic trend like that, is the aging of the population.
Right.
The effect it has, for example, on the cost of Medicare and Social Security, which is unsustainable. And some people are trying to think strategically in terms of we better be thinking about how to cut those costs now and not wait until we're overwhelmed.
Right.
So, yes. Another thing, Rob, that goes with demographics that I think people pay less attention to and is often even more important is psychographics. And we've talked at other conversations about the shifting values that we're seeing in the population.
Mm-hmm.
And those are psychographics. So we're seeing a very different the point that I made before about how people are looking at the internet on healthcare and coming up with their own views, questioning the physicians and so on. That's a result of psychographics, that we are seeing changing attitudes and values about authority and about self taking much more self-reliance, much less dependency on organizations.
So what you're saying, it's not just looking at what age group is moving through. It's really them going deeper and understanding their behaviors and their values and how their perceptions.
Exactly. And that's all part, that needs to all be part of strategic thinking. You know, and some companies now are hiring anthropologists. I've worked with some who they send in to families. Procter & Gamble uses, Heinz Foods uses anthropologists. See, how do people eat their meals? What do they like? What do they eat first, et cetera?
Sure.
And when you put that together with demographics and psychographics, you have a much better sense of where things are going.
Well, again, very interesting information from you, and that's why, as I started in the introduction of the program, this wonderful blend you have of being this anthropologist and also a psychoanalyst, you can bring a richness to this type of dialogue. We were talking before just briefly about the qualities or the competencies of a leader who is a strategic thinker. Can you talk more about that?
Well, you know, I was talking about systems thinking, which is, I've done a lot of interviews with CEOs about strategic intelligence, foresight, partnering, visioning, also motivating people to implement that vision. And the biggest lack, the biggest gap is systems thinking. We are brought up in our schools and in our graduate schools to think analytically, to take things apart, to stack up things. And we don't look at the whole interactive system. And there are three kinds of systems, as Russell Acuff wrote about in his really excellent book, Creating the Corporate Future. You have mechanical systems like a car, where you can design all the parts together. You have organic systems like the human body, where the parts genetically are made to interact and serve a purpose. A system must always serve a purpose. And we have social systems like organizations, where the parts include human beings who have come in with their own purposes.
Sure.
And that's why leadership is so essential, to create a common purpose and to motivate people so that they believe in it and they're willing to help create that vision, that system. But we still have big gaps in understanding systems thinking. And I've noticed that in my work in Asia, in Japan, in China, that they think much more systemically. It's much more in their tradition to look at holistically, like the yin and the yang together. We see that in the Toyota system, much more of a system. It's called the humanware system, where all the parts are designed to work together interactively.
And Michael, could part of that reason why they seem to be better at that than we are is that there's still more traditions are kept alive there in their cultures than here?
Well, you know, I learned something some years ago. There was an exhibition at the National Gallery of Art in Washington on what they call the daimyo culture in Japan. And that was a 16th century culture of chivalry, of knighthood. And the knight, the Japanese knight, had to learn both the arts of war and the arts of drawing, of haiku, poetry. So they learned both archery and swordsmanship and horsemanship, but also poetry and painting and so on. It was all combined, while in the West, we've separated that. And you see that in the best Japanese companies today. The combination of strategy and beauty and design and aesthetics which I would say in the United States you only find with Steve Jobs.
Well, that's right. I mean, to a large extent. And we've talked recently on Leadership Leverage about Apple and this this beauty that they seem to have, not only in the way that the products are designed, but beauty in how the products work, and even beauty in terms of how they're distributed. I mean, you go into an Apple store, and it's a fairly, what I would call, beautiful or almost sexy experience.
Well, you know, Steve Jobs gave a lecture once at Stanford University where he said that he went... He was for a while a student at Reed College in Portland, Oregon, and he said the only course he really found interesting was design. And once he had taken that course, he dropped out.
Oh, interesting.
And so that he has always combined that interest in design and beauty with the technical product view. And we really need more of that kind of thinking. We need more thinking. You point out that I'm both an anthropologist and a psychoanalyst and also a student of business and strategy.
Right.
And I think it's a mistake to narrow our learning. The more we can combine areas, the more we're able to be innovative.
So, Michael, what suggestion would you give a leader today in the United States who is listening to this, who's wanting to be more systemic in their strategic thinking, to come and have more strategic intelligence? What might be a first step that they could take?
Well, I mean, to speak from self-interest, they could take our workshop on becoming a leader with strategic intelligence, which I've been giving together with my colleague Tim Scudder,
who's okay,
in Carlsbad, California. But I think they've really got to. There are a number of books that can help your thinking about strategy. I talk about Drucker, Porter, Russell Acuff on creating corporate future, W. Edward Deming, who had a really systemic view of quality. All of these people were thinking in parts of systemic strategy, but I think what they left out is the human side, is more you've got to understand the people you're working with also, because today strategy, good strategy, includes a purpose and a philosophy of leadership that turns people on, that they really relate to. It includes understand what I call personality intelligence, understanding the diverse attitudes, values, sense of identity of the people you're working with. So all of these things go together. Foresight, partnering, because the more you understand people, the more you understand who you need to partner with, both within your organization and externally, because we're in a much more interactive global economy in which if you're not thinking interactively, if you're not partnering with others, you're going to be unable really to create that kind of excitement and dynamism that companies need today to be successful.
Well, I think you're absolutely right. And so what you're really saying is there's a planning part of strategy, but then there's the execution part of strategy. And to execute that, it really takes this systemic thinking, it takes the collaboration of understanding that you cannot do it alone, and understanding really the motivations of your workforce and how to communicate to them, right?
Right.
And
well,
I want to talk more about that when we come back after our second commercial break here. We need to pay our sponsors. You're listening to Leadership Leverage here on Voice America Business. And our guest today is Dr. Michael Maccabee, who's talking with us about strategic intelligence. We'll be right back. Please stay with us.
Since the year 2000, RDN Partners have been helping client organizations across North America and Europe achieve breakthrough performance by providing practical solutions for talent identification, talent development, and improved team performance. Our services include executive coaching and onboarding, sales selection tools, validated to predict sales success, web-based pre-employment and development assessments for executive, managerial, supervisory and professional positions, talent reviews and team coaching, as well as competency modeling, including web-based custom 360 surveys. At RDN Partners, we don't arrive with ready-made solutions. Our service offerings have to fit the context of every aspect of your company, its markets, competitors, strategy, and culture. Please contact us today at rdpusa.com or by calling 888-600-7457. We look forward to helping you be successful by building and retaining your high-performance talent.
From the boardroom to you, Voice America Business Network.
You're listening to Leadership Leverage with your host, Dr. Robert Danker. If you have a question or comment about today's program for Dr. Danker or his guests, please call 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or if you prefer, send an email to info@rdpusa.com. Now back to Leadership Leverage.
Welcome back to Leadership Leverage. I'm your host, Dr. Robert Danker, and we've been talking today on the concept of strategic leadership, and more specifically, gaining an understanding of what it means to have strategic intelligence. Our guest today is the distinguished and popular educator, author, and international consultant, Dr. Michael Maccabee. Today's dialogue emulates from the writings, research, workshop, and university lectures that Michael conducts across the globe. Michael, before we went on to break, we were talking about some of the qualities that are required for a leader to have this strategic intelligence, and we were talking about there's two aspects. One is to define it, and then the other is to execute the strategy and to grab the hearts and minds of the workforce that you're leading, that's following you in order to do that. But I want to talk to you and ask a question about, well, what is the relation between changing strategy and then changing other parts of the organization?
Well, I mean, that's part, Rob, exactly about what it means to implement it. You know, when you were talking about the fact you have to combine it, I thought of the old story they told during World War II of they brought together a group of very distinguished scientists to try to figure out how to deal with the German submarine menace. And they worked together for a while and came out with the solution of heating up the Atlantic Ocean 2 degrees, and submarines would come to the surface where they could be taken care of. And then they said, well, that's fine, but how do you heat up the Atlantic Ocean?
Right.
2 degrees, and these distinguished scientists said, well, you didn't ask us that. You just asked us about the strategy. And we can't think that way anymore.
No.
And that was the way companies used to think, GM used to think. You know, it was, here's our strategy, now you people do it.
And, it was more, here it is, and just figure it out yourself.
Figure it out yourself. Yesterday, when you ask the question, how do you, what's the relation between changing strategy and other parts of the organization? I think one of the best examples today to look at is IBM. And IBM had a strategy of selling computers.
Right. That's right.
Their products were becoming commodity. So they were their margins were disappearing. And along came Sam Palmisano, who's now CEO, and he said we need a different strategy. And we need a strategy rather than selling our products wrapped in solutions. Is that clear? I mean, what the strategy would be instead of saying to a business customer, for example, Rob, we want to sell you a mainframe computer. Rather than that, they would say, Rob, do you have any kind of problems of data efficiency and effectiveness in your organization? Mm-hmm. Let us take a look at them. And then let us try to see if we can give you a solution that will be of value to you, save you money, make you more effective with your customers, etc. Now, to do that, that's a huge shift.
It is.
Because the whole structure of the organization has to change. You have to be able to have different groups work collaboratively, the product groups, with the groups of consultants who are analyzing your problem. They had to buy a consulting company because they didn't have those skills, that ability. They had to change the way they worked together. They had to change the kind of leadership they had in the front line, which was creating networks. So they had different types of leaders, strategic leaders, operational leaders, who made sure the right processes were put in, but also network leaders who could create the trust and the interrelationships that it would allow a team to work together for just a limited time as they worked with a customer and then go back to their own specialty organization. That's huge, huge shift of a modern strategic change.
Well, that is a huge shift, and I think a lot of the success of that would be predicated on how that new strategy is rolled out, how it's communicated.
Right. And there are two things they did and that I think are essential to do. One was a very clear philosophy of leadership that Palmisano communicated and communicated.
And what were some of the elements of that? What were some of the elements of that?
Well, a philosophy always includes a purpose. Our purpose now is not just to sell people hardware and software. Our purpose is to help them solve their business problems. That really is a big shift.
Okay.
Second of all, different values. We need to change our values. And what he did was have what they called getting everybody in the whole organization to be able to discuss their ideas of what values are needed to make this work. A jam, they called it a jam, a jazz jam,
mm-hmm,
of players.
Okay.
Everyone in this huge organization, 100,000 people, were able to send in their view of what the values needed to be, and they went through all that, and they created values that were very different from the old IBM values, that rewarded people collaborating, helping other people. IBM was the first company that hired me as a consultant. And when I was hired by IBM in the old structure and model, they were against collaboration. It was all, I remember one manager saying to me, if I had my team work with me to participate in making a decision, I'd be fired. I have to make the decision. Everybody relates to a single manager in that system.
So it was really a command and control type of environment back then.
Command and control in a very military way. Now, this really are totally different values that are put in to this system. So everybody must everybody must learn and interpret for themselves the new philosophy.
And Michael, I would think that some people would embrace that new strategy, and of course others would not, and maybe they need to opt out then of the...
Well, let me say something before that, because one of the problems of communication is that if you communicate a new strategy to your organization, the first thought in everyone's mind is, what does that mean for my job? And I learned this. I was working with a company where I was asked by one of the general managers and EVP of the company to help him because he was having a hard time communicating a new strategy.
Okay.
And so I said, well, I'd like to meet with your direct report. So I met with both his direct reports and the people right under that, a group of about 30 people. And this vice president's name was Jack.
Okay.
And so I said to the group of managers there, what do you all think of Jack's new strategy, his new vision? There was a dead silence. And somebody said, what new vision? And Jack said, I told you last week. Well, we don't remember. So I said, tell them again. So he described this vision, which was really a very interesting vision. And there again, a silence. And I asked, well, what do you think? And someone in the back said, Jack, does that mean I should stop working on the project I'm doing right now?
Oh, sure.
So that's one thing. You must, if you're going to communicate a new strategy or vision, you must take account that everyone is going to be asking the question, what does it mean for me and my role?
So you really then have to answer that in a very personal way.
Right. But you can't do that in a personal way until you start thinking like Sam Palmisano on how you're restructuring the whole organization. On the other hand, you better, before you go ahead with this, you better be sure you're listening. I had the experience once I was working with the CEO of a large healthcare organization, and he had a brilliant vision and strategy, and he was describing it to his top people, and they were they were skeptical, they had questions, and he was paying no attention. And I said to him, I said, you're not listening in a break. You're not listening. He said to me, I didn't get to my position by listening to other people.
Oh, wow.
And that was true. He didn't get to his position by listening to other people, but he got fired because he didn't listen to other people.
Well, I was going to ask what the outcome was of that CEO, that leader, and I guess I'm not surprised to hear that.
Yeah, I mean, it was sad because he really had a very superior strategy and vision for this organization.
But again, I guess he didn't understand the importance of the collaboration and the fact that he could not do it alone.
Right. He lacked an element of strategic intelligence. He had the foresight and the system thinking, but he lacked the partnering and the motivating.
Go ahead.
Yeah, and the understanding of the people he was working with. He picked some really poor people as partners because he thought they were loyal to him. Rather than because they added a competence that he needed.
And there we go, back to the whole issue of leadership selection and as it aligns, or in this case, did not align to strategy.
Right.
Michael, we have to take another commercial break, and when we come back, I want to talk more about communication of strategy, and particularly how a leader deals with resistance, because there's going to be in any shift. So let's do that. When we come back from commercial break, you're listening to Leadership Leverage here on Voice America Business. I'm your host, Dr. Robert Danker, and today's episode is about strategic intelligence, and our guest is a very popular and distinguished Dr. Michael Maccabee. We'll take this break, and we'll be right back in about 2 minutes, so please stay with us.
Find out what's happening on the Voice America Talk Radio Network by keeping up with us on Twitter. You can find us at Voice America TRN.
Since the year 2000, RDN Partners have been helping client organizations across North America and Europe achieve breakthrough performance by providing practical solutions for talent identification, talent development, and improved team performance. Our services include executive coaching and onboarding, sales selection tools, validated to predict sales success, web-based pre-employment and development assessments for executive, managerial, supervisory and professional positions, talent reviews and team coaching, as well as competency modeling, including web-based custom 360 surveys. At RDN Partners, we don't arrive with ready-made solutions. Our service offerings have to fit the context of every aspect of your company, its markets, competitors, strategy, and culture. Please contact us today at rdpusa.com or by calling 888-600-7457. We look forward to helping you be successful by building and retaining your high-performance talent.
The business community's first choice in Internet Talk Radio, Voice America Business Network.
You're listening to Leadership Leverage with your host, Dr. Robert Danker. If you have a question or comment about today's program for Dr. Danker or his guests, please call 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or if you prefer, send an email to info@rdpusa.com. Now back to Leadership Leverage.
Welcome back to Leadership Leverage. I'm your host, Dr. Robert Danker, and we've been talking today on the concept of strategic leadership, and more specifically, gaining an understanding of what it means to have strategic intelligence. Our guest today is the distinguished and popular educator, author, and international consultant, Dr. Michael Maccabee. Michael, before we went on to break, you were talking about the importance of communicating a new strategy to the organization and how a leader should do that, and we entered into briefly the issue of resistance, and resistance is going to come from a lot of different areas. Some of it's predictable. I'm sure that some of the areas of resistance might even be a surprise to the leader, but how does a leader who is changing the strategy and communicating the new strategy deal with this issue of resistance?
Well, you know, you could deal with resistance in a very dictatorial way, but I think that that will lead to resentment. You want, as a leader, you want the people that you're working with to want to follow you. You want them to be motivated to follow you. And therefore, if you've got people who are resisting, you can't be a dictator. I think you have to be more of a doctor. And by a doctor, I mean, you know, think of a doctor who has a patient, say, with diabetes, who refuses to change their diet. Well, the doctor's going to tell them, if you don't change your diet, you're going to be in the emergency room. You may have you may end up with an amputated leg.
That's right.
And if the patient still refuses, the doctor's going to say, I can't treat you anymore, because you're not listening to reason. That's in your own self-interest. Now, I think as a organizational doctor, you have to understand the person who's resisting. What are their values and motivations? For example, in one healthcare organization, one of the doctors, one of the best doctors, was resisting using evidence-based medicine because he felt that they were only doing that in order to improve income, when his value was helping the patient. So you have to show, as they did in this hospital, you have to show the results of people who use the right pathway versus his results, that they were worse. In other words, he's going to be only persuaded when he sees the evidence. You have to be able to, if it's somebody really who's resisting because they can't fit in, they don't have the confidence,
right?
You have to be clear about that to them, that they really are not going to do well in this organization. And however, if you do feel that they could be valuable contributors, I call it the four R's, are your medication as a organizational doctor. Your responsibilities, put them in the right job, relationships, make sure that they have support and that they're really creating good relationships, rewards, recognition, make sure that you really, we know, Rob, that one thing we never do enough of is recognition. We never do enough of recognizing people for what they contribute. And finally, of course, reasons. You need to make clear why. What's the purpose? Why is this essential?
Well, and I couldn't agree with you more. And in some of the consulting work that we do, we're advocates of talking to leaders about using more of the why and less of the what. In other words, in their messages, we're really suggesting that close to 80% of that talk about why we're changing versus the mechanics of what we're changing.
I worked with company ABB, big electrical engineering company. I was working in Canada, and we had to change just the way IBM did, from selling products that were becoming commodities to creating solutions for business customers like metal and mining customers and utilities and so on. And many of the older engineers rejected that. They said, oh, no, we need the best product. It'll always sell. Well, what we had to do was bring in the customer right in the room and let the customer tell them, we don't want to buy products. We want solutions. We want cheaper, cleaner energy, not your power transformer.
And so that was really impactful then, I would think, to that group of engineers to hear it out of the mouth of people who really are the ones that are signing their paycheck, the customer.
Right. And then sometimes I really believe very strongly you will only get people to fully understand change and support it if you can bring the customer right in there.
So again, it's this outside view. It goes back to what you've been talking about throughout the program, this collaboration and thinking systemically. Who, as a leader, do I have? What resources can I bring in to help enact this change and make it stick?
Right, right.
Michael, we've got about 2 minutes left in the show, and I want to have you have the opportunity to tell people where they can go to find out some more information about your strategic thinking workshops that you hold all around the world. And if you could do that, and maybe also just share with us briefly on what a workshop agenda looks like. What do you cover?
Well, first of all, just go on the internet to www.leaderswened.com. One word, leaderswened.com.
Okay.
You will see the description of the workshop on becoming a leader we need with strategic intelligence. You can also get a presentation I made at Google headquarters on this. But the point, what you will learn is how to develop your strategic intelligence, which allows you to create, enhance, restore trust with a skeptical workforce, operate beyond just pure financial goals to include organizational contributions to a better future, inspire, motivate, and lead a diverse workforce, select and work with partners who complement your strengths. You will learn, you will develop the ability to create a clear and powerful leadership philosophy. You will understand more about yourself and what motivates you as a leader and what motivates the people you lead, and how to not only motivate them, but how to avoid unnecessary conflict in the organization, so that when you have really discussions, they're really based on facts and not getting into people's feeling hurt, feeling their self-esteem attacked. All of these things are part of a three-day workshop that we've already given to companies. We gave it to the management of the National Park Service. I've given it at Oxford, in Paris, to the International National Public Administration Program, and many more places.
Right, and as I said, all around the world. Michael, again, I want to thank you for being our guest today on Leadership Leverage and providing us insights into this topic of strategic intelligence, and also, lastly, the wonderful background here of where people can go to get more information or to take a workshop and get some hands-on experience. Again, thank you for being part of the show.
Well, it's always a pleasure. There's so much to talk about, Rob. We don't cover half of it.
Well, we may have you back yet again, Michael. I appreciate that. To all of our listeners today, I want to thank you for being part of Leadership Leverage. And until next time, this is your host, Dr. Robert Denker, and the doctor is out.
Thank you again for tuning in to Leadership Leverage this afternoon. Please tune in again next Tuesday at 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 p.m. Eastern Time, for another edition of Leadership Leverage with Dr. Robert Denker on the Voice America Business Channel.